Saturday. It is February 9th, 2019. This is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the frigid Chicago suburbs. Yesterday morning, my front door was frozen shut, and this morning, when I walked into my office, it was 52 degrees. I keep the door of my office closed because it's cat-free. But this morning I thought, oh, I better open a door. I can't sit in a 52-degree office and do a radio program. So I opened the door. It's kind of, I don't think the insulation is good in this room. It's an outside room. It's on the exterior of my home. And so I think when they were putting in the insulation, I think they may have not got an adequate amount. Anyway, it's like an oven in the summer and a refrigerator in the winter. So I opened the door, and of course the two cats came in, and Leo, who not only is a narcissist, but he's also a little thief, so he takes things off the desk. So anyway, but we're here. And I do appreciate you joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I invite you to visit and subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net and ScreeningSandyHook.net. During the program, email questions or comments to comment@spingola.email. I invite you also to visit our chat room, which is usually very friendly and inviting. And you may do that by visiting spingola.chatango.com. You may view our past, current, and future guest lineup at spingola.com. When you visit the website, spingola.com, you click on the radio schedule button. It's on the left-hand side. You pick the year, the month, and you will see all kinds of, well, I think it's wonderful information because it has links to all of our past guests. It has links to relevant topics, relevant books, relevant everything. And so it's really quite a nice resource for the listeners of this program. And I do sincerely appreciate all of my listeners. I know that you can, particularly on Saturday, there are probably things that you have to do, that you'd rather do. So I do appreciate you listening to the program. And you will find that schedule all the way back to October 23rd, 2010, which is when I first began broadcasting on RBN. Just visit spingola.com and click on the appropriate button. My guest today, and let me give you the phone number because we will have callers, excuse me, in the third hour, and that telephone number is 800-313-9443. I'm very honored today to have a guest. I've interviewed him before. We have a lot of commonality. It's such an honor to have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson on my program, and his website is rusjournal.org. And Dr. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Deanna, it's been far too long. The honor is all mine.
Well, thank you. I just feel we do have so much in common, and I so appreciate your work. And so I'm very happy to have you back in my environment, and we cannot wait this long in the future.
Oh, well, I agree.
In your latest work, which you were thoughtful enough to send, and it's going to be featured, tell us where that's going to be featured. It's going to be featured at the Barnes Review.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm working on so many things at the same time. I can never remember.
That's what I do, too.
Yeah, I don't even remember how many books I have out. I think it's 9. I think you're referring to my latest book on the Soviet Union.
Yes, Life Russia's Has Become More Joyous, Revisionist Essays on Soviet History.
That's right, and that's that line, of course, comes from Stalin. He wrote an article in Pravda about the gaiety that he was seeing throughout the USSR since he had been chairman of the party. Wow. So that's a pretty funny thing. I couldn't resist having that as a title.
Oh, gosh.
And he says this, life is far more, the gaiety is overwhelming. Life has become more happy, more joyous, more laughter. So,
yes, especially in the Ukraine, right? In the early 1930s?
Well,
that was really joyful.
And so it's funny in a very dark way.
Yes.
But these are essays that I've published all over the place, Barnes Review and elsewhere. And I realized, of course, they have a lot of things in common. And so put another book together. And so I did an introduction and conclusion. I dedicated it to a bunch of people, and that was it. So I'm actually pretty proud of it. I don't like what I write or what I say. I'm usually very, very critical. But this one, it's something that needs to be said, and no one's saying it. But speaking of books, I do want to say that this is not, any kind of a flattery here, but I usually dislike much of what the far right puts out intellectually. But The Ruling Elite is an excellent book. I've been recommending it all over the place. Usually our stuff has a lot of amateur elements to it, poor reasoning, but it's an excellent work.
Thank you. And you're talking about my trilogy, and I thank you for that.
Well, I just have the one, The Ruling Elite.
Probably number three.
It is one that has a Hawaii section in it.
Yes, probably that's three. It might be. I'll have to look. I will have to look.
It was given to me by a fan, and that the Hawaii just happened to be my favorite because I was just reading about that at the time. Very few people know about that. And just you're an excellent writer, an excellent historian in a movement that doesn't have many of those. Our academic work is very, very paltry. I seem to have to do everything. And it's really because we've been shut out of academia, of course. But it's not to flatter you. That's a serious work of history, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you very much, and I appreciate you appreciating it.
Well, that's good.
In your acknowledgments, which I'm an empath, and when I read your acknowledgments, I just my heart goes out to you for some of the things that you have experienced, and something else that struck me. Is where you ended up. You ended up in Johnstown, PA. And I did in one of my books, I wrote about Johnstown and the Johnstown flood, which I think a lot of people are familiar with, but a lot of people are not familiar with the fact that it was a deliberate event.
No question.
That was caused and created by some people who wanted to take over a business, the iron business.
There's no doubt.
And so they just decided to eliminate the company along with thousands of other people, and it just didn't matter who they killed or who they flooded or what they did, as long as that event caused them or helped them to develop or gain a monopoly in the iron business. And I, when I read that's where you're from, I thought, oh my gosh, oh, what a coincidence that you would end up there, that you would be there, settle there. And anyway, we don't always recognize or understand some of the things that are happening, and I'm thinking in conjunction with the deliberate flood in that area. I'm just kind of thinking about this unseasonable. Well, it's not unseasonable, but the extremities. The extreme cold and the extreme everything that we seem to be experiencing recently. I think it's just a little bit unusual. particularly when you consider California, and when you combine the destruction in so many states, and then consider that weather manipulation was something that they were participating in Vietnam during the war against Vietnam, one has to ask questions. So,
was your Johnstown article in the Ruling Elite book? I can't remember.
Yes, it was in the. It may have been in the second one. I'll have to look that up. I'll bring up all three of the trilogy.
I came across that. Of course, you know, the Johnstown, the Flood Museum is right around the corner from me.
Wow.
I've been there many times. I've spoken to people who specialize in it. In public, they won't say that it's deliberate. Frick, in particular.
Right.
Was the main guy. It was very clumsy. I mean, you know, they were deliberately taking material out of the dam.
Yes.
To you know, the fishing and hunting, the Conemaugh Fishing and Hunting Club.
Right.
And for the very elite. And they were deliberately making the dam weak. They had warning after warning. And the reason that they made the dam weak is they were taking wood out of it to make the road wider so you could have carriages go both in and out.
Right.
And it went on top of the and they knew exactly what they were doing. When you pull this stuff out, and then you have a valley underneath you, and so what had happened, there's no question, it wiped out pretty much everything. It's tremendous force. There's a church here that has a sign that says the only building that was left standing, which is the Catholic Church down here. And there's no doubt, deliberately weakening this was a way to destroy, and not to mention the huge working class down there.
Oh, big, huge working class.
Russians and Germans.
Yes.
And wiping them out and starting over again. That this was it was not only a deliberate thing, but it was poorly, you know, they weren't trying to hide it. It was so
right.
obvious. So, but back then they didn't have the internet, so.
Right, and they all, Frick, you mentioned this gentleman by the name of Frick, his partner was Carnegie. So it's... And he never did. He always thought that monopolies were bad, and he figured that in the book that he wrote, figured that the government should take care of business. He wrote what did he say? He said to leave monopolists in control would not be tolerated by the people. Therefore, there must be control, and that control, as far as one sees, must be in the hands of the general government. Now, he wrote a two-part essay, Gospel of Wealth, in 1889. And it's just amazing what they did. And as you say, one building was left standing. Oh, terrible. Terrible.
Well, I could look out my window, and I could actually see, because I'm on a mountain, I could see down the empty factories that are still there, the empty foundries.
Wow.
So the ruling class destroyed that place by a flood in 1889, and they destroyed it through globalization, you know, roughly 100 years later.
Yes.
And Johnstown is in a permanent state of depression. Its population is shrinking. Its pot, you know, potholes are everywhere. Homes are cheap, but and this used to be one of the most prosperous, one of the central towns in American industrialization.
Yes.
Johnstown, both for steel and then sending coal to Pittsburgh. So the ruling class has destroyed Johnstown numerous times in numerous ways.
And the potholes are not only just existent in Johnstown. There are potholes all over in many areas. In fact, they were just talking about it on the news just in this last week. The potholes here in the Chicago area are just immense, where it's causing a lot of damage to cars, and it's terrible. And of course, they build roads here in this country that are designed to fall apart. And certainly, those in the Chicago area and the suburbs are really falling apart.
Yeah, the infrastructure is falling apart. I was commissioned to do a paper on the legal issues in Western Pennsylvania, potholes. And I was actually struck by what I discovered. I discovered that the state government, county governments have insulated themselves from any responsibility, damage to your car or accidents or anything like that. The standard is there has to be a written warning sent from a motorist to the proper office in the county. And then there has to be a reasonable length of time for them to fix it. So if you wreck your car, get into an accident, and you say this should have been fixed, if there's no written note warning the city about that there's this huge pothole here, they're completely immune. Wow. I have the feeling if they had to pay for, I don't know if it's the same in other states, I'm pretty sure it is, because if they had to pay for damages caused by potholes, there wouldn't be any potholes. But as the weather is more and more extreme, as you mentioned, I see kids swimming in these potholes sometimes, and right. it's not only that doing damage to cars, which no one around here can afford, but it's also causing a lot of accidents.
Well, there are many industries, not just county governments, but industries that protect themselves by making public announcements, so that they are immune from prosecution, and it's pretty sad. And the taxpayer always pays for their own destruction, it seems, in just about every case.
Well, in Johnstown, you know, and I think a lot of the old industrial cities, Pittsburgh didn't do a bad job in rebuilding. They really didn't. But other places, you know, Duluth, even parts of St. Louis, it's still just impoverished. They never quite recovered from the crash. There's no money. There's nothing for these people. It's always the same group of people who run everything. It's an oligarchy. No real civic consciousness. No real political movement of any kind. One of my favorite words is abulia, which means a lack of will or a lethargy that comes from the belief that nothing can be done and that there's really nothing worth fighting for. And I see that everywhere, not just here, but it's extreme here, but I see that everywhere. You know, the American taxpayer was forced to bail out the banks not too long ago.
Right.
The banks are now doing the exact same thing that they got in trouble for in 08.
Right.
Nothing has changed because pretty soon they're going to run out of money. The economy is far worse, and I know you know this, it's far worse than we're told. Inflation is far worse than we're told. You know, the unemployment figure is the lowest, you know, U2 figure that they have, which is just people who are collecting benefits. That's what the unemployment figure reflects. There's lots of unemployed people who don't collect benefits. Unemployment is probably about 20%, and that includes underemployment. So the system does everything it can to protect itself from any kind of criticism. And the most obnoxious part is the belief that governments have anything to do with the economy. No, investment decisions are not made by presidents and congressmen. They're made by multimillionaires that most people have never heard of before.
Right.
And using the state to take the blame for a bad economy is very, very convenient for these people. And so it goes back to the same, you know, Frick and Carnegie and the same behavior. They know they can get away with it. They know that there's only a handful of independent press outlets here. So that's how it is.
Right. All righty. We are going to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty, thank you so much. And I welcome back. Our guest is Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, and I'm very happy to have some new music. I thought, oh, it's a new year, and a friend of mine suggested that I change the music, and the music that you are listening to is from my other, when I was doing another broadcast, and I just love the thoughts that are in that song, so... Anyway, I hope that you enjoy that. Anyway, our guest website is rusjournal.org, and we were talking about government corruption, and we were talking about the Johnstown flood, and I do write about that in the book that you have, and the book that you have is the second in the trilogy. And I talk about a lot of stuff. The Johnstown flood is I wrote about that in the chapter called Managing Competition and Other Petty Annoyances.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. You know, it's dangerous to do a huge survey like you've done, because, you know, we can't be experts on everything. But I'm a specialist in Russian history, as you know, and your Russia section is actually very, very good. Usually people, you know, because it's such a different society, you can't use Western terminology to describe it. It's usually a disaster. The minute you you use, you know, contemporary terms to refer to another civilization's history, you know, words like human rights or equality or something like that, you know that these people are amateurs. Mm-hmm. You can't do that, especially with something as foreign to Americans as Russia. But you've gone over a lot of old information and did an excellent job with it. You know, I didn't throw the book across the room like I usually do with people. I didn't scream and yell. So congratulations. You did an excellent job in the Russia section, and especially when it comes to the royal family and the role of whether it be the Jews or major bankers and how fake the revolution was. So that's – I mean, a lot of our people know this, but and it's one of the reasons I got into this field is the fraud, whether it be the Cold War or, you know, really anything about the – I wrote this book on the USSR because the entire operation was a fraud. It's one of the reasons I got fired from all my academic jobs. I've been a professor all over the country, and I've been fired from every single one, I'm proud to say, while being the most popular professor on campus by far. Having more publications than any two professors put together, because the entire thing is a scam, and it's really hard to lecture the standard view when you know this to be a fact. And since it's our job as historians to take away the appearances, the veil, and expose what's underneath, you figured I'd be celebrated for this. But surprisingly enough, I was not celebrated for that.
Well, you're a unique professor. In as much as you actually were teaching the truth, whereas most professors teach a particular thing and they wouldn't dream of going outside of the boundary, which
remember,
you did.
I mean, I never editorialized. You know,
right.
That would be professional. My approach was to describe a person or a movement or a situation as they understood themselves.
Right.
No one thinks they're the bad guy. You can't just immediately say, you know, Hitler was evil or Lenin was evil. I mean, you have to understand what they thought they were doing. And that I always thought was really the purpose of a historian anyway. You know, the slave owners in the American South, did they think they were evil? No. They thought they were doing a good thing. Well, how did they? And this is what I did. And there was, you know, there was no advocacy one way or the other. But even mentioning this, even talking about the Versailles Treaty and how Hitler came to power pretty much on the backs of that disastrous treaty, that was sufficient to get people complaining.
Mm-hmm.
And students loved it, though. Students, you know, when I say I was the most popular professor, I'm not kidding. When I got fired from Mount St. Mary's, there was a protest of 181 students, mostly female, about a third black, saying, you know, this is ridiculous. He's done nothing wrong. To this day, I don't know why I was fired. I mean, we know the real reason, but, you know, they never really gave an official reason. So, you know, but thank God I have generous listeners that I've been able to make a living doing this and translating and writing and doing, you know, papers for different organizations on our side once in a while. So I've been able to make it work.
And thank goodness you have, because I think people really want the truth, but... as with so many people, if a person believes that they have the truth, they are not going to go looking for it. And I think that even in the so-called alternative media, there are many people who think they know what they're talking about when in fact they are in error on certain things, as I was when I first began writing on the internet back in 2005, and I have had to go back and make notations saying I was wrong about this, and I think you have to be willing to look at what you've believed and then recognize when the truth hits you
No movement can function without humility. My first book, The Third Rome, Tsarism, Russian Orthodoxy, you know, I was 29 when I wrote that. I was angry when I wrote that. And I stand by it, but I've done numerous radio shows and articles, you know, correcting or reinterpreting parts of it. Because, you know, when you're young, you know, you say when you get older and wiser, you're not gonna agree with the same things. That's just normal, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Sure. Alrighty, we are going to a quick 3-minute break, and we'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on. And learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty. Welcome back. Deanna, and we have our guest today, Dr. Matthew Johnson. His website is rusjournal.org. And anyway, we're talking about the fact that sometimes the people don't recognize the truth when it hits them, but I believe that people want the truth. Of course they want the truth, but so many people are programmed and they don't understand that they're programmed, and it's kind of a shame. And it's easy, I believe, because when you consider who runs the schools, who runs the colleges, as you're well aware of, and who runs the media in this country, as well as big industries, then there's reason why so many people are programmed and don't recognize the truth until they actually come to grips with it. Usually it happens if there's a crisis.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden, okay, go ahead.
No, yeah. I'm just agreeing with you. You're absolutely right. Yeah. It usually takes a break. You know, the original Greek for crisis is judgment.
Yes.
You know, people, one of the hardest lessons I ever had to learn, Deanna, is that people would rather hear what they want to hear other than the truth, that the truth that we preach is hard. People would have to change their entire lives, all of their social contacts, everything, if they were to agree with us. They knew that they would have to suffer, that they would be ridiculed, They might lose their job. They'll be called names. They could be physically assaulted. I lost mine purely for ideological reasons. So the fact is that truth, self-interest seems to rule far more than any abstract desires for facts. You come out of grad school and you're researching, and all you're doing, you're building arguments and citations and truth and logic. And you realize that when you talk to people, truth might not necessarily be an important category in their life. They want to believe what makes their life easier, what juxtaposes better with what they already believe. And there's nothing more dangerous than to go to somebody who buys into the system and calmly and slowly destroy their worldview. Bursting the bubble of one of these people can be dangerous. Because how many times in my experience happened many times where you're debating with somebody, you win, they come to agree with you. Well, I never thought about it that way. And you hear them a day later saying the same crap again.
Right.
This happens all the time. But I do believe truth, finding the absolute truth of things isn't that hard. I think a few conditions have to exist. Number one, you have to get rid of self-interest. You have to not care where your conclusions, where your logic is going to go. You can't have anything that's going to stop the progression. Self-interest is, and we're all guilty of it. Cherry picking, all this stuff. We're all guilty of it. Number two, you have to be humble. Number three, you have to work very, very hard. Number four, you have to know where to go. You have to know what text to look at and methods of interpretation that make sense. If you have that, and I think I do, personally, truth is laid bare. Unfortunately, it's a truth that gets into a lot of trouble. And we've all suffered because of this. So the facts aren't the issue. Their self-interest is the issue, in my opinion.
I think you're right, because there are doctors who are, they belong to the American Medical Association, which is a labor union, and if they go against the standard of care, they could lose their license. If you're a journalist and you say the wrong thing, you can lose your job. If you're a professor and you teach a curriculum that is not conducive to the general belief system, then you can lose your job, as you've done, or you can suffer personal injury. Now, I have interviewed several people on this program over the years since I started, and many of them have just sort of faded into the background because of the physical threats that were made against their lives, or because they simply could not handle what was happening to them. If people are younger and they're just getting started, then you cannot afford to throw away the possibility of obtaining an education because of what you believe, or if your family is threatened, or as you say, when you start talking about the truth, or when you go against something that you've believed in for a very long time, and you've built your whole social structure around that, and then all of a sudden you say, wait a minute, I don't think this is true anymore, and give numerous reasons why not, all of a sudden you've lost your entire social body, and it can be really difficult. Mm. But if you can no longer embrace something that you know for certain is a lie, and you are dwindling in self-doubt, and you're uncomfortable, and you just can't do it anymore. You have to break, even if it costs you the majority of your friends and associates, and even family members.
Yeah, you've hit on one of the most important, if not the most important issue that our people have to deal with, and that you're going to suffer. if you try to be anonymous, they'll find out who you are. One of our people on Radio Aryan has just been doxxed by the Huffington Post. And, you know, I've been using my real name. My address is online. My license plate number is online. I don't give a damn. I have Barnes Review stuff in my my CV. You know, I never hid from it, but that comes at a price. I can't be doxxed at all. But now, the way I got through grad school, and people have asked me this many times, is that I'm a nice guy, and I was very friendly and very deferential. So by the time these people figured out that I wasn't on the mainstream, they weren't that upset with me. Oh, that's Matt. He's just crazy. Don't worry about it. Yeah, he said always says that. You know, that kind of – rather than he's a threat.
Right.
And if
well, you weren't at the time. Maybe.
What do you mean? Not a threat at the time? Well, you know, the
– You were a nice guy and people didn't see you as a threat.
Personally speaking.
You're right. They saw you as a nice guy and they just figured, oh, he's just a little different. Let's just go along with him. And
that's right. Yes. And that's how I did it. That's how I did it, you know. But they knew I was good. And I was, you know, my first semester teaching, I was 24. And I got the University Parents Association Teaching Award. So, you know, there's not a whole lot they can do with that. And because I spoke to them, you know, I was very pleasant and very agreeable and listened to what they had to say. I didn't go, you know, Zieg Heil on the first day, like some of our idiots do, and wonder why they're getting thrown out of places. You know, you don't call names, you don't use vulgar phrases.
Right.
You don't, you know, there's just some nasty. Our people put stuff on Facebook, and they wonder why they get kicked off, and I kick them off it.
Sure.
You know, and because I write and speak in an academic way, I don't think I'm an easy target for a lot of our enemies. I mean, there's plenty of articles out there on me from ESPLC and everything else, but, you know, but I made a decision, as you mentioned, I made a decision in 1990, right when 1989, Christmas Day, 1989, Nicolae Ceaușescu was executed by his own soldiers. And that was the moment. I remember it like it was yesterday, but I said, this is what I'm going to do. Because a few days before, no one believed the Soviet Union was going to collapse. It was this huge colossus. And then overnight, it falls to pieces. There was no war, no big battle, no economic depression, nothing. It just fell apart. And I said, I was a musician at the time. And I said, oh, no. Oh, no, no. This is what I'm going to do. And looking at Ceaușescu's body there, I made a decision. I looked over to my sister and I said, I know what I'm going to do with my life. So I knew this was going to be a problem. I knew it was going to be a struggle. And I said, even then, I can't allow self-interest or jealousy or anger or any emotion like that to get into the way of any research I do. Special pleading is awful. You know, and university professors and journalists especially live in fear. Those jobs are very easy. They're very cushy. There's a lot of money there and prestige. But they're also very rare. They're shrinking. And so people who have those jobs will do anything to keep them. I've had professors out after a couple of beers tell me that, of course, you're right, man, on such and such an issue, but I'm not going to destroy my career over it. And it's really hard to argue with them on that. And I think this is the case in a lot of places. A university professor has a very easy job. You know, you're talking about things that you know. Most of your things are done for you. Your research is done by students. And, you know, no one wants to lose that. You're making six figures in most state universities. So you know, maybe a half dozen times I've heard the phrase, yes, you're right, but I'm not going to risk my career over it.
Right. And I think that is what a lot of people say. But I remember a few years back, this is so funny, when I think about it, somebody was making this accusations against me, and they said, even her name is made up. Spin is her goal. And they said that they could tell by the shape of my ear or some dumb thing that I was really somebody else and this was just a made-up name. But Spingola, that's my married name, and it's a very common name in Italy. And it was just so stupid. But there were people that actually believed this. they actually believe this crazy person that was saying this. So, and I guess there are some people who are looking for conspiracies and use conspiracy theories to try to get rid of us or eliminate us or make us look ridiculous, when in fact they just make themselves look ridiculous. Because when you come up with the facts and the figures and the real truth, and they try to discredit that, it's so funny. I just find it really kind of funny.
Well, it is, and I know I have not come across that spin trying to analyze your name. That's pretty hilarious.
But, isn't it funny?
But I've heard about it with other people too, and my view of the matter is that our people really are an oppressed class. And
yes.
Whenever they get a chance, you know, they're going to let off some steam. This is one of the reasons alcoholism is such a huge problem in our movement.
Oh, really?
Oh, of course, yeah. You know, I've been active on the street level since early 1990. And, for the young men, it is a problem. And just general immaturity and the kind of know-it-all attitude, symbol over substance and all that. It's our people aren't heard. They don't really have a forum where anyone pays any attention to them. You're driven from academia, you're driven from journalism, and this is what you get. This kind of, you know, temper tantrum is what happens. So, you know, pity those people rather than be angry at them. God knows what they've been through. I've always said that I define a brother or a sister or a friend as anybody who has a very good chance of sharing a gulag cell with me. I think that's the case, then they're my brother, and I'll do anything for them. That's how we have to think.
Sure.
And we don't have to agree on every little thing either.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's a very important issue, because there are people that I agree on them with them on numerous things. But if you have a disagreement with somebody over something that they believe, you should stick to that belief, not attack the character right. of the person who believes it. Just state that you disagree on an issue, because you may have to work with that person later on, or he or she may be a very good friend, and you never want to go after a person's character. But just go after the issue, because that's really what's important. You don't want to discredit a person's character.
Right, right. They're not just wrong. They're infiltrators, and they're demonic, and they're sick.
Right. That's ridiculous.
And
yes.
It happens all the time. And a part of the problem is, you know, we don't have a lot of intellectuals. We don't have a lot of people who know how to build an argument. I think we take for granted sometimes. We do it all the time. But building a serious historical political argument takes years. It's a lot of work. Logic can be very, very difficult. You have to make certain that every avenue of escape is sealed off. You have to do a lot of work. And most of our people, good people, aren't really capable of that. And so emotion and anger and feeling, especially self-interest, gets in the way. You add alcohol or jealousy over women, which does show its head once in a while with us. It can be a disaster. It's as of right now, as of early 2019, we have no institutions. We have no substantial presence institutionally in this society. And I just did an interview yesterday on Donald Trump, the State of the Union. You know, regardless of what we may think about him, he's all alone.
He is absolutely all alone.
He doesn't have his party. He doesn't have, certainly doesn't, not the Democrats, not the Republicans, not the Heritage Foundation, not the Cato. You know, he is all by himself. And that's because we don't have the maturity or the money or the ability to create lasting institutions. You know, there's a lot of rich people on our side out there, but they're not going to give money unless they see an institution that stands the test of time. And the last one, of course, was Willis Cardo's Liberty Lobby, where I was hired in 1999, and he gave me my start. And that was the last one.
Yes, and he was a nationalist. And so many people have used that, have disfigured that word to the point that it has become something evil, when in fact it isn't. A nationalist is just somebody that believes in their country and believes that their country should be distinct and have protection and not, it's just the exact opposite of being a globalist. And globalism is certainly on the rise with all of the wealth of multiculturalism. And we'll be right back in 3 minutes.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s, along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Do you worry a lot? If you're forgetful, nervous, moody, or overwhelmed, chances are you're not protecting yourself from the ravaging effects of stress and anxiety. No matter the cause, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, your quality of life, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in as little as 1 to 2 weeks and increase your ability to recall facts, names, and numbers in 4 to 12 weeks. Calm and Clever was created by scientist Kurt Hendricks, a principal investigator in 2 NIH-funded studies on Alzheimer's disease. Try Calm and Clever for 2 months. You'll feel the difference. Call 1-800-758-8746 or go to calmandclever.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Our guest today is Dr. Matthew Johnson. His website is rusjournal.org. That's rusjournal.org. And we're talking about, a lot of things, and certainly about not going after people just because of an issue, or not going after a person's character because they have a different belief than you do about a particular thing. At the end of your acknowledgments, you said in your latest work, that will be published in the Barnes Review, and you were talking about Willis Cardo, which of course brought up the word nationalism, but you said you signed off July 17th, 2018, and mentioned that that is the 100th anniversary of the murder of the Russian royal family. And I thank you for mentioning that. There have been so many people slaughtered, and first you have to destroy the institution of something, as you mentioned before, that you have to destroy what people have come to believe in, and institutions that are really in favor of their people and who attempt to make life better for the people that they are serving rather than the people they're exploiting.
Well, and they're I'm Russian Orthodox, as you know. I'm a member of the clergy. I'm a convert. I converted back in graduate school, and Tsar Nicholas II was one of the reasons. He technically would be the last Roman emperor, descending from Constantine in Byzantium. And at the time of his, but he never abdicated. That's a myth.
Right.
That's a forgery. Was never signed. It's not in the proper. It actually had to be handwritten, according to law, but it wasn't. It was done on a typewriter. Like a lot of great leaders, he was surrounded by traitors. And there's so much. You know, I do have a book out on the subject. I published it as I was writing that, on the nature of the murder, the ritualistic aspects of it, the fact that these the scrawlings on the wall have been found in Israel as well, in assassinations there, you know, different context, but it's a formula. And they knew exactly what they were doing. This was a Jewish ritual murder because they feared the popularity of Tsar Nicholas. You know, when when World War I began, 98% of Russian land that was farmable, arable, was in the hands of the peasantry. Russian taxes were the lowest in the world. Russian economy was booming. They had just discovered oil in the Caucasus, which is what got England very upset. As soon as the Soviets exploded, the Rockefellers and Rothschilds took over those fields. Their savings rate was going through the roof. Their population growth was going through the roof. They had a huge trade surplus. In fact, they were almost completely self-sufficient. They were feeding much of the world. They had a great degree of equality. When you have peasantry owning the land, either communally or individually, the church was getting stronger and stronger. And so, you know, there was no censorship under Tsar Nicholas, except when the war started, contrary to myth. And the Jewish press there knew that they couldn't attack him, so they went. They created this myth of Rasputin, who is beyond, you know, what we think we know about Rasputin is mostly nonsense. And the proof of this is the I have an essay in my latest book on the extraordinary commission, which the white government or the Kerensky government put together to investigate corruption in the Tsarist regime, and they found nothing. Now here you have people who have every motive to try to justify their revolution, and they found absolutely nothing, including on Rasputin. And so Rasputin was kind of invented. I mean, he was a real person, but they invented this character because it was the only way to really attack the royal family without attacking the royal family directly. And of course, the Germans were, unfortunately, you know, they should never have been enemies, but were involved in some of this nonsense as well. When Tsar Nicholas took over the Russian front in 1915, that's when the Russian army had its greatest breakthroughs, and Germany was completely exhausted in a short time. Most of it, the truth is, Deanna, and I, you know, it depresses me every time I say this, but you take the average educated American. Everything he thinks he knows about the world or history is a lie. And we're at a point now where we don't even have the same language anymore to discuss things. You know, the old myth that Russia